Good morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I think you all know who I am. Okay. I am the survivor of the deer crash. Apparently I'm lucky to be alive. Anyway, I am Sandy Ingham. Oh, hi Al. Your part-time consulting minister, and we're all lucky to be alive. I'm not sure what to do with that, whether to throw myself into good works or to party hardy. Maybe aim for a balance. So welcome. No matter who you are, Prairie has a wonderful history of being an open-minded and open-hearted congregation. Prairie welcomes everyone, no matter what ethnic, religious background you come from, whatever your color, whatever your sexual orientation, your gender preference, or your family structure. We welcome you, no matter what your age is, or what your abilities or your inabilities are. We do provide a wide variety of services, which most of you know, so if this is one of your first times, please come again, because something different will happen next week. Sometimes I lead the service, sometimes someone from within the congregation does, and sometimes someone from outside the congregation does, and sometimes someone in a very wonderful hat helps us get started. The opening words are by Unitarian Universalist Minister Rosemary Bray McNatt. And if you will note, at the very end, you will all join me, please, for that last line. The truth is this. If there is no justice, there will be no peace. If we cannot bring justice into the small circles of our individual lives, we cannot hope to bring justice to the world. And if we do not bring justice to the world, none of us is safe, and none of us will survive. Nothing that we do is more important than making justice real here where we are. Okay. For the chalice lighting, we have words by Edward Everett Hale. I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. I realized that it's possible that not everyone knows what we mean when we talk about GA. So are you going to get into that, Nancy? Great. I will happily turn it over to you.
This year's General Assembly, the Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly's theme is All Are Called. In the co-moderator's letter, all are called and needed to transform our faith communities and institutions in service of the Unitarian Universalism our worlds need today. In the Welcome to GA blurb, the GA experience, gather, banner parade, learn, sing, witness, and worship together. Bring lessons home to help change and heal ourselves and our broken world. One of the things I wanted to get at GA this year was hope, especially in these times. And by golly, I got it. My first source of hope was the UUA new president, President Susan Frederick Gray. She's from Arizona. She was involved a lot in the immigrant work down there by the border. And she is the first woman president of the UUA. She talked about different groups of people. She had the image of a circle. And for so long, it's been that the people with privilege are right in the center, and all the other people are on the margins, and they don't have much power, and they're not much involved with the whole group. So what she is suggesting is that we centralize the marginalized and move to the outskirts, the privileged. A second source for hope is Unitarian Universalism Association, organizational structure and actions. Over many, many years from the 60s on, the association has tried to include different groups, Black UUs, different genders, youth, Spanish speakers, to some benefit and not any complete process. Last year, there was a case of institutional white male supremacy in a UU hiring decision. The association formed a commission on institutional racism to address these concerns. Also this year, a community safety team was formed because of concerns about police treatments of Blacks. The community safety team will mitigate contact with police. We are to call them first before calling 911. They will support and model community safety, intervene in incidents of harm, attend to emotional crises where safety is an issue, and interact with outside agencies, including police. Well, there was an occurrence, and I will tell you about that. Right outside the convention center, a white man's car ran into a Black woman's car. And the white man got out, and he was just yelling, and it was sort of out of control. So the team member went over to the woman, and she said, "I'm here just for you." She helped de-escalate the man. She helped contact friends and family of the woman and her children who were in the car. Some of them had to go to the hospital. And the police arrived later. So it was a good example of how you can do things differently. The last source of hope is the symbolism in welcoming and closing services, interwoven fabrics and threads. We are a tapestry of different fabrics and colors interwoven. We twirl the cross strands into thicker ropes we commit. Hold on, honoring our faith, our relationships, and our commitments. Weaving our threads, celebrate our callings, and making promises together. And Barb wove my wristlet, which is to remind me of every day to see people as they are. So now I'm going to talk some about racism and privilege. Racism is a system of advantage based on race. Privilege exists when one group has something that is systematically denied to others, not because of who they are or what they've done or not done, but because of the social category they belong to. Alan G. Johnson. Some categories are race, class, education, religion, economic status. So, with the concepts of racism and privilege, I have in the past had some educational opportunities which were valuable. I attended the Healing Racism series, History and Pathology of Racism and Help Heal Racism, a 10-week series with Richard Davis in 2002. The Madison, Wisconsin Institute on Racism continues to offer these series. I learned a lot, including how racism hurts whites and a better understanding of what privilege is all about. I also participated in an anti-oppression, anti-racism workshop at James Reeb. I was shocked at how easy it is to design an oppressive society. Shocked. So last year at GA, our WHERE lecture was by Brian Stevenson, the author of Just Mercy. Oh, something else with education. I went to APT's play, The Blood Knot, which is a story about two brothers in South Africa, and one is black and one looks white. And it's really a powerful play. So if you have some time, the Blood Knot is great. So Bryan Stevenson states that the opposite of poverty is justice. And he has a model for how to increase justice. Be in proximity to the poor, disadvantaged, suffering, and neglected. Learn their histories, conditions, and stories. Walk in their shoes. 2, change the narrative and the policies that sustain white supremacy. Change the use of words such as criminal, lazy, when applied to one race only. 3, be hopeful for justice. And 4, do uncomfortable things. After I heard that lecture, I decided that white supremacy was the issue. So what did I do? Nothing. So what will I do now that I have hope that, you know, we can do things that can actually change things? I'll continue to educate myself, reading. There's plenty of lists out there. I just got Fandeka's Learning to Be White book, and also today I should be getting White Fragility. And I'm watching more PBS programs on race. Another thing I will do is use the Richmond Pledge to eliminate racism and prejudice all over the world, one person at a time. Its goal is to develop issues of confidence and competence in identifying and addressing the issues of racism wherever it lives. Several of the statements I will use are, I will strive daily to eliminate racial prejudice from my thoughts and actions. I will discourage racial prejudice at every opportunity. I will strive daily to honor this pledge. Now, in terms of privilege, I am privileged, and I will work to get a deeper understanding of my privileges. I suggest that the privileged share their resources and use privilege in ways that can empower those who lack it. I got that idea in part from an article, How Can I Cure My White Guilt?, which appeared in the New York Times on August 14th of this year. Instead of calling myself an ally to different groups, I'm going to use the word accomplice, and I'm going to practice in accountable solidarity. And last, I will be present. The Reverend Bruce T. Marshall defines present as the essential principle of what does help is simple. Be present to other people as they are, not as you want them to be. This means putting aside your own needs and expectations so that you can pay attention to this actual human being who is right here, right now, in front of you. And I put a copy of the program from General Assembly on the table out front and a bunch of these stickers from our district, our region, Mid-American region. We believe love is love, and about 6 others. So those are free for the taking. Thank you.
Thank you, Neith.
First of all, this GA was in Kansas City, and Kansas City was a surprisingly wonderful town. I was amazed. I'd never been there before. And I hadn't been to General Assembly in several years. And she titled my section Elder. I felt old. It's the first time in my life that I truly felt old, because I saw these young people moved way beyond where I thought I was sort of at the front of understanding racism, sexism, white privilege, all that sort of thing. No. I was way in the back. It was really an amazing breathtaking, holding experience because they were so far beyond where I am, which, as Nancy said, was a hopeful thing. So I found this General Assembly on a very personal level. They use the term a lot of intersectionality. I'd never heard that term. I didn't have a clue what they were talking about, which apparently is the intersection of all of the isms. But it was a totally new term to me, and they acted like everybody ought to know what that was. Another reason I felt old. One thing that was hugely revealing to me was a different look on rules. For example, we now have two moderators for the General Assembly sessions, and the bylaws say you have one. Well, so we worked on changing the bylaws, but they changed the practice first, and then they're going back to change the bylaws. You know, opposite of sort of what we normally would do. And they talked about Robert's Rules of Orders as being sort of, you know, a white European privilege sort of system. Well, duh, it's named for Robert, you know. So, and they said, we put rules. I would put people before we put rules, rather than putting rules before people. I thought that was just profound and flexible in a way that we're not used to as being sort of the people in control and in charge. And then I went to the UU Humanists two meetings, and they had Mandisa Thomas spoke. She was written up in the latest humanist magazine, if you get that, called Five Fierce Humanists, and they're all black women. And she formed something called Black Nonbelievers, and she's the president of this group. And that was very interesting because she talked about how humanists, we think of humanists as sort of white Europeans, you know, when you think about it. But she talked about black humanists back to Frederick Douglass. Named many people up to the present time. And she talked about how in the black community, for especially women, the church is central to the kind of culture. And if you come out as an atheist, you are just rejected by the community. So her organization was formed to help support people who come out as humanists. And there was a woman in the group from Washington, D.C., who stood up at the end and spoke so powerfully. She was a black woman of maybe my age or maybe even older. And she said she realized as a teenager that she didn't believe in all that stuff. And she did finally tell her sister, and her sister said, "Don't you dare tell Mama, you'll put her in the grave." So she didn't. She kept going to church and doing all the things that was expected of her to do. It wasn't until after her mother died that she finally came out as an atheist. And then was a while before she found the UU Church, and she was just thrilled that there was an organization where she could be comfortable as an atheist, as a non-believer, but was totally rejected by her family as a result. I mean, her sister was just continued to be appalled that she could identify as an atheist. So Mandisa Thompson's work is really, really important. The other thing I wanted to talk about was developing personal relationships, and that's something that you get to do if you go to General Assembly. And if you go time after time, so I met lots of people who I knew from being active in the CMD, the Central Midwest District, when we still had a Central Midwest District before it got
regionalized,
I guess that's the word, regionalized, gobbled up, and we and we talked, and we talked to those people about, okay, we are all going to the next conference, which is in St. Louis. We all made a pact, meet you in St. Louis. But I ran into an elderly black man who I was sure I knew. Well, when I went up and talked to him, he said, "That's my brother, you know." So his name is Reverend Finley Campbell. And after the Ware lecture, I was feeling really bad about myself. You know, it just, that was a very powerful anti-privilege, anti-racism sort of talk. But I had talked to Finley earlier in that day, and he said, "Well, I've invited a group of people to talk about the Ware lecture and the future of the UUA after the Ware lecture back at the hotel." So I met him, and it turned out it was just the two of us. So we had a wonderful talk, and he lifted my spirits, but he told me about his history, which was fascinating. He was a Baptist minister, not too surprisingly. And in about 1956 or 57, I think, they went in a group of these young seminarians, or maybe had just finished, went to church in a white Baptist church, and they kicked them out. But they said, "Try going to that church down the street. They like heretics." And that was a Unitarian church. I think it was it might have been Universalist. That was before merger. At any rate, he said, "Well, they didn't exactly welcome us with open arms, but they didn't kick us out." So he's been a UU ever since, and was grousing because he doesn't get voting privileges as a minister because he's still credentialed as a Baptist minister, and not as a UU minister at, I think, about, he must be about 85. So we had this wonderful talk, and so there was a lot of things that happened on a very personal level, but I was incredibly encouraged with the movement of the UUA in general, and the young people and the people of color and the LGBTQ people are really leading the way. So it was very hopeful.
Thank you, Barb. And thank you, Nancy. And I would just echo everything that you said. General Assembly happens every year. It's our business meeting, and it's all those other things. Lectures, seminars, big reunion, introverts struggle with General Assembly the first time, a couple times they go, but they figure it out. It is expensive. That's probably my main criticism of General Assembly. It moves around throughout the country and different venues, and used to include Canada. In fact, I went to Calgary. I went to a General Assembly in Calgary in mid-90s, I think. And the last one in Canada was in Quebec City in the early aughts, as they say. And then Canada went their own way. Who can blame them? Was getting into something else there. So, planning ahead, next year's General Assembly is in Spokane, Washington, where I roomed with Pat Watkins many, many years ago. The one in 2020 is in Providence, Rhode Island, but put this one on your calendar. 2021, Milwaukee. 2023, they don't know about 2022 yet. We'll only go to 2023 because it means something to me. Pittsburgh. Of course, I still have family that lives about 80 miles north of Pittsburgh. So, assuming we're all alive and well, start planning. There are ways to offset the cost. You could share a room, or I have a good friend from my days serving the Plattsburgh, New York congregation who stays out in the outskirts of wherever we are and just figures out public transportation. And sometimes she has her car with her. You can plan your eating very carefully so you're not at the mercy of the hotel restaurants and all of those. Sometimes they're really, really good. And no, I'm not putting that on my professional expenses. Well, maybe a breakfast or two, but not the chocolate martinis. Oh, okay. So, you can apply for a prairie grant, and which we do. We set aside money every year when we make enough in our pledge drive to pay at least one person's registration, sometimes two, and sometimes maybe some travel costs, depending on how much we raise. Let's see. Oh, and then often I have found, and Gary, I think this was true of you, that people have relatives in far-off places or good friends, and so General Assembly can be a reason to combine visiting the relatives, as we did with the children's story. What did I expect? A nothing, except to be comfortable and reassured in this faith, and expected, I hoped for hope. So thank you, Nancy. I did come back with hope. I didn't expect the wisdom part that came. The feeling old was a good thing, right? I mean, if we have to feel old, this was a positive thing. So I feel that I came back with the wisdom to have confidence again in this movement, this denomination of ours. Sometimes people say to me, I got this from one of you the other day, who's not in the room, so I'll say it. We have to stop saying we're unique. And I've been wrestling with that. I think her point was, we sometimes tend to say we're unique, therefore we're special, therefore we're privileged in a different way, not white privilege. And we've got all the answers, which of course we do, but it's best not to act that way. But I think the uniqueness is in our tradition, in what has come before us and what we still hold dear. You can come here and not have a deity that you worship. You can come here and say you're an atheist, and I hope you're comfortable. You can come here and say you're a Christian Unitarian Universalist, and I hope you're comfortable, and everything in between. We've done services on Sunday mornings about this, and we will continue to do that. So what I got was energy renewal also. That kind of energy renewal is much better than a Red Bull, better for you too. And I came away with the two things that dearest to me right now in where I think Prairie should be putting its energies outside of Prairie. We should put energy into our relationships here and our infrastructure, which I'm happy to report that the board is amazingly still working on policies and procedures, and they're getting there. And thanks to the past boards for getting us to this point. But the two things that I came away with that I want us to keep, and you'll hear this on Sunday mornings, is our continued work on the racial divide in this country and how we speak about people of color and how we communicate with others who don't happen to have our skin color. There's a curriculum called Beloved Conversations that Nancy picked up a little bit of information, not 2 months, however long ago, 6 weeks ago in Kansas City, but in New Orleans last year. And I'm looking for eight people at least to delve into that with me. And I'm also looking for $1,000. Because that's what it will cost to bring somebody here to do this. It's a big commitment. It's 6 or 8 weeks. And we'll do it with Reeb and James Reeb and First Unitarian, the other two Unitarian Universalist congregations right in Madison. And the second thing is the climate change issue, because, I've said this to you all before, It's like the Beyond War days when Reagan said we could all, I don't know, go somewhere when the nuclear weapons were dropped and be safe. If we can't figure out climate change, in many ways, everything else is moot, isn't it? Graphics. Visuals. Time for visuals. I'm going to talk more about this next week, so I'm just going to mention it now. The program committee's theme this year is the Unitarian Universalist Association. This is a brand new group within the UUA, within the Unitarian Universalist Association. It is Unitarian Universalist Ministry for Earth, UUMFE. I picked up some of their literature at GA. It helps answer that question that every time we talk about climate change in this room or anywhere else, I feel I leave you, or whoever the speaker is, leaves us with this. We know all this, and this is when we believe all this, but there's nothing we can do, or what can we do? Because it's so overwhelming. So this kind of, this definitely addresses that. I also hope some of you might be interested on an adult religious education class this school year. Living in Madison, in a college town, I tend to think of things in terms of, so this church year, the book Justice on Earth, did either of you pick that up? I did buy it, and it's going to be the read, the Unitarian Universalist Association read for this year, Justice on Earth. So I'm hoping, it's not terribly expensive, that we can maybe have a study group around this. Anybody ever hear of Ken Ward, the reluctant radical? I'll talk about him for just a little bit next week. So the only thing I went expecting was to be comfortable and to get some encouragement from my colleagues about this calling to UU ministry, and I did get that encouragement, and I connected with so many people. I also went because for the first time ever, General Assembly had a section called poster parade? Poster, what was that? Just posters. Poster session, where you could put up a poster, and then you sort of stood there and hoped somebody came around. And because I had told Barb and Nancy and some of my other buddies, people did come around. And I'm still plugging this book, We Rise to Resist, and I have the concluding essay in this book. And I think you need to know that about your minister. And it has just won two prestigious international awards. And came in second or third one. Unfortunately, it's expensive. Oh, it's $39. It's McFarland Press, and it's paperback, and it's pretty sturdy. But I will donate a copy to our library. So, that's enough. I think that we could all go on. And anybody, how many of you have been to General Assembly? I know some of you have. That's good. I think this was my 20-something. And I was wondering how many we had amongst the three of us. Probably 25 at least. Probably way more. Way more. Okay. Well, thank you all.
Our closing words today are by Bill Sinkford, entitled Only Begun. Spirit of life and love, dear God of all nations, there is so much work to do. We have only begun to imagine justice and mercy. Help us hold fast to our vision of what can be. May we see the hope in our history and find the courage and the voice to work for that constant rebirth of freedom and justice. That is our dream. Amen.
Drink coffee, whatever.